Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome inside ESPN Studios. This is the Spencer Wilson Show. I'm your host, Spencer Wilson. Happy Monday to you, everybody. I hope your weekend went well. I hope you've adjusted to the time change with daylight savings. Hope you enjoyed your extra hour of sleep that you got two nights ago, I guess, technically. I was going to say yesterday morning, but either way, hope you enjoyed your extra hour. Hope you're adjusting well. It always takes me a couple days. I woke up again at like 6 o'clock today, where I normally wake up at 7, and was thrown off a little bit. So it always takes me a couple of days to adjust, but I hope you're doing well. Hope your weekend went well. Hope by now that your hangover's worn off and your coffee's kicked in. You got a nice meal sitting in your stomach and you're ready to take on the week. Let's talk about the weekend. I'll give you my reaction, of course, to the NFL's slate that happened yesterday. All the games from morning to night that were some upsets. There were some interesting close games as well, some great performances. So we'll talk about that. I'll give you my reaction to the United States Grand Prix that went down yesterday in Austin, Texas, saw a champion crowned. And then, of course, we'll talk about Monday Night Football going down tonight. But we're going to start here locally as the Nevada Wolfpack are back in the win column on the gridiron. The football team back at home after two straight road games at Utah State and at Wyoming. They got to host the New Mexico Lobos. And Nevada took care of business. Now, 21-10, that score against a team that hadn't won a game in conference and has only won two games this year might, again, after the previous two games, might be a little bit of a turnoff to some fans. But you know what? It was a hard-fought win. It was a solid win at home. It was good to see Carson Strong out there again, being comfortable as quarterback and really facilitating that offense and making some great plays. I mean, between the three quarterbacks we've seen, I think it is pretty firm and pretty obvious now that Carson Strong should be the guy going forward for the rest of the season should he stay healthy. With the game he had yesterday and the way he carried the pack through that air, through that passing game, really making some pinpoint passes and getting the ball down the field, of course, having two touchdown passes yesterday, one from 57 yards out to connect with Romeo Dubs there in the second quarter. But a really solid game from this Wolfpack team at home. Talked about it last week for them to get back on track this season, for them to think about a bowl game, for them to think about getting the cannon back. It all starts with that game against New Mexico. And Nevada took care of business. Again, bit of a shaky start there in the first quarter, not getting any points on the board, and allowing Amari Davis to go for a four-yard touchdown run to get the scoring kicked off for New Mexico after a nine-play, 90-yard drive there. But Nevada defense got stout. Stood back up in the second quarter, shut down New Mexico for the second quarter and allowed Nevada to get back into it. Toa Tower with the one-yard run to cap off a 15-play drive for Nevada to tie it up 7-7. Then a few minutes later, like I said earlier, Carson Strong hooks up with Romeo Dubs from 57 yards out. 14-7 now, Nevada going into the half. It was a second quarter that was that had a lot of hope to it. Like I said, you saw the defense really stand back up. They recovered from that touchdown drive they gave up in the first quarter. And really, from that touchdown drive, yeah, they allowed a field goal in the third quarter, but New Mexico didn't get back into the end zone after that first quarter touchdown. So it was great to see the defense again get hyped up, get ready to make some stops, stand strong, and stop New Mexico from getting back into the end zone. And then Nevada, again, not getting able to get into the end zone for the third quarter, looked a little shaky, 14-10, started gnawing on your fingernails a little bit, wondering how this fourth quarter was going to go. Is Nevada going to be able to shut the door and get a bigger lead, or is New Mexico going to be allowed to stay in this game and possibly pull off an upset here in Reno? But it didn't happen. Elijah Cooks, 20-yard pass from Carson Strong to cap off a 5-play, 46-yard drive. Nevada goes up 21-10, just under 6 minutes to go. And at that point, it felt academic. It felt like Nevada had it, the way their defense had been getting better and better throughout the game. And Nevada back in the win column, 5-4 now overall, 2-3 in conference. You got three conference games left, and of course the game coming up this next weekend against San Diego State isn't going to be easy, and neither of these last two road games are going to be very easy going up against San Diego State and Fresno State. And this is the one that I'm most nervous about. With the three games left on the schedule, UNLV coming home on November 30th, Yeah, it's a rivalry game, so you never know what can happen, but I feel pretty confident with the game being here in Reno at Fresno State. Never easy to win against the Bulldogs in Fresno, but if they're going to win one of these two road games, I feel like that's the one they have a better chance of winning, because San Diego State's just playing really good football right now. Top of the Western Division, their offense has a good rhythm to it. Their defense has been able to get consistent big stops in each game that they've played. So this is going to be the biggest test in their second and these last four games of season. This last third of a season. They got past the first game in New Mexico. These next two games are going to be the last true character builders. And this game at San Diego State is going to be a big game for Nevada. Even if you lose that game, it's important just to stay competitive. You can't have a Utah State or a Wyoming outcome on the road against San Diego State, because that could derail all the momentum you just built with this home win against New Mexico. And you don't want to have to then sit there with a bye week after getting your butt handed to you again by San Diego State, and then try to rebound from that going into Fresno. So even if Nevada can't win this game at San Diego State, just stay competitive. Stay in it with the Aztecs, push them to the brink, make them make big plays in crunch time. And if you can't escape San Diego with a victory, if you keep it close and fight all the way to the end, you can take that little bit of momentum, stack it on top of the win you got against New Mexico, and take that into your bye week, continue to build on that mentally, and take that into Fresno State. I think Nevada will be very hard to beat that weekend against the Bulldogs. But like I said, it's this comeback, this last third of the season comeback starts with a win against New Mexico, and Nevada got that win, which is great to see. Great to see Carson Strong out there playing well. Great to see Devontae Lee have some of those runs. Oh my gosh. Got to watch the highlights of the game afterwards when I got home after doing highlights of the game. And after listening to John Ramey call some of those runs from Devontae Lee, all I wanted to do was physically see some of those runs, and I got to do that. And Devontae Lee, you are a beast. So that was a lot of fun to see that. So the run game looking good. Passing game with Carson Strong looked better. Defense got stout. This is a Nevada team that's setting themselves up for a nice turnaround at the end of the season. So we'll see if they can continue that on the road against San Diego State. But, of course, the football team, not the only team in action. Women's volleyball hosted Boise State on Saturday and beat the Broncos 3-1. Boise State came out and won the first set 25-23, put Nevada a bit on their heels, but the Wolfpack came right back at them in the second set to win it 25-20. Coming out of halftime, Nevada again up on Boise State 25-18 in the third. Then Nevada finished it with a classic fourth set, beating Boise State 28-26, take the 3-1 victory. So now Nevada 16-8 on the season, 6-6 in conference, on a two-game winning streak now. And next up for the Pack, they will be at San Jose State this Tuesday, and then at Air Force this coming Saturday. It's all part of a four-game road stretch coming up for Nevada. Is after those two games, they'll be at UNLV and at New Mexico before coming back home for their final two home games and final two conference games of the regular season. But, like I said, talk a little bit more about this Nevada-Boise State game. It was a great performance from Nevada. Great team performance. Kayla Afoa led the way in kills with 17, followed by Brianna Sousa with 13. Mandalay Renan and Ryan Blackwood each had 3 aces. Sydney Peterson led the way in blocks with 6. Dallin Burns had 51 assists. And then Kayla Spevic had 15 digs, followed by Kayla Afoa with 14. So another all-around great effort from this Nevada Wolfpack volleyball team. On a two-game winning streak, seems like they've turned their luck around. They're playing really well again, like they were at the beginning of the season. And can't wait to see what they can do now on this upcoming four-game road stretch over the next couple of weeks. The women's soccer team finished off their season at UNLV. Unfortunately, the Pack couldn't come away with a victory against the Rebels. UNLV got a goal in each half, scored early in the first, just the fourth minute. When Michaela Morris got a penalty kick goal for the Rebels to put them up 1-0. And then in the 69th minute, Malika Markham added to UNLV's total to make it 2-0 Rebels. And that is the end of the women's soccer season, unfortunately, coming up short against UNLV. But they do finish 4-14, 3-8 in conference. And I'll be excited to see what this team can do next year with Aaron Otagaki having a fair amount of these girls hopefully come back and return to this team and keep building for next season. And the swim and dive team stays undefeated. They beat Boise State on Saturday here at the Lombardi Pool, 187-113. So not only are they 5-0 overall, but 3-0 in conference play as well. And now this team is getting ready for, they have a little bit of time off. November 21st to the 23rd, they'll be down in Houston, Texas for the Phil Hansel Invitational. And then the cross-country teams had their Mountain West Championships this past weekend. The men's team finishing better than what they were expected to finish. The men's team posted a final score of 243, which had them finishing 8th in the conference. 33 points ahead of Fresno, but 23 points behind San Jose State. But this was still a stronger performance than the men were expected. They were predicted to finish last, which would have been 11th place, but instead came through and finished 8th. The women's team, projected to finish 8th, finished 8th. They had a final score of 244, which was ahead of 9th place UNLV by 49 points, and also got Nevada some points in the Silver State Series, and then finished behind San Jose State by 50 points. They're in 7th, but another strong showing by the women's cross-country team as well. And now they will both be ready for their NCAA Mountain Region Championships, which is coming up a week from this coming Friday, when they will be in Salt Lake City, Utah, for another, what I'm guessing will be another warm cross-country run. If you didn't get the sarcasm there, it's going to be very cold in Salt Lake City, Utah. Then to give you an update on the men's and women's tennis team, the men's tennis team rounded out their fall schedule with the Pacific Fall Invitational in Stockton, California, where they had some struggles, but they still had a pretty good showing there, and they'll get ready for their spring seasons to start up in January. But the women's tennis team had a solid finish to their fall schedule, hosting the Wolfpack Invitational this past Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and posted an overall record in that competition of 35-1. They went 11-0 in Friday's singles competition, 12-1 in Saturday's singles competition, and then 12-0 in the Sunday doubles competition. So a heck of a showing from Nevada's women's tennis team. They'll be off now also until January when they get back into action at UC San Diego in La Jolla, California. So that's what went down locally here in Reno over the weekend. A lot of great stuff coming out of Wolfpack Sports. Happy to see how that continues through the rest of these fall sports seasons. And, of course, with winter sports starting up, men's and women's basketball will have their series openers tomorrow night here in Reno. The women hosting St. Mary's at 3. The men hosting Utah, I believe, at 7 or 7:30. I'll have to double-check on that. But basketball season starting up tomorrow. Everyone's pumped for that. Hope you are too. And we'll see how it goes. A lot of promise. A lot of promise with the men's and women's basketball teams after their combined 3 exhibition games going 3-0. So it should be a fun kickoff to the season tomorrow. But when we come back from the break, the Formula One United States Grand Prix is in the books. A champion was crowned. We will talk about all that coming up after the break here on the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio 94.5 FM.
Is your technology infrastructure meeting the demands of your customers, your employees, you? How does your network scale to support your growth plans? With distribution hiding behind every corner, it's time you benefited from a network and security provider that will guide your organization through rapid technology change. Blackfoot, here to enable what's next. Visit blackfoot.com/SDWAN to learn more.
Well, the 2019 Formula One season only has 2 races left, and both champions have been crowned. With Mercedes, of course, winning their Constructors' Championship back in Japan. Now, Lewis Hamilton has secured and won his 6th Drivers' Championship, which puts him 2nd overall, all by his lonesome there in 2nd with 6 Drivers' Championships, 1 behind Michael Schumacher's world record of 7. And what a race it was in the United States here yesterday in Austin, Texas for the U.S. Grand Prix at the Circuit of the Americas course. And it was another fun race, another entertaining race, great crowd that showed up for it to support Formula One. And, I mean, if you're Valtteri Bottas, you did everything you could to try and stay in the championship hunt. You won the race, got 25 out of a maximum of 26 points. He didn't get the fastest lap, that one to Charles Leclerc. But Bottas won the race, which is all he could do, and then tried, was, you know, just going to cross his fingers and hope that he got some help from the rest of the field. He did not, as Lewis Hamilton came in to finish 2nd. So even though Bottas beat Hamilton and outscored him by 7 points, not enough to stay in the fight to Brazil. So Lewis Hamilton wins his sixth Drivers' Championship while Bottas wins his fourth race of the year. And before I talk about Lewis, I want to talk about Valtteri for a second, because this is a man that was on the fence with Mercedes coming into this season. It wasn't for sure that he was going to get the Mercedes seat for this year. Esteban Ocon was kind of sitting and waiting for his chance to possibly slip into that Mercedes next to Lewis Hamilton and contend for Mercedes. But Valtteri Bottas has done a great job picking himself up this season and making it known that he is a true championship contender moving forward. Because if you look at his year last year, right, 2018, he had some bad luck here and there. For the most part, he just wasn't doing that well on track. He was struggling to keep up with not only Hamilton, but Vettel, Raikkonen, Verstappen, all the kind of big names that were for Ferrari, Mercedes, and Red Bull last year. And Bottas struggled. He didn't win a race last year in 2018. He only had a handful of podiums with some second and thirds here and there. And he finished fifth with 247 points to Hamilton's 408 last year as he won his the World Championship. So if you were Valtteri Bottas, you had to come into this season and really prove that you deserve to be there and you have the skill to be there. Because again, Ocon was waiting. He was prevalent in the first four or five races of the season, standing next to Toto Wolff and watching the racing and really seeming like he was taking it all in case he was able to get that seat at Mercedes. But Valtteri Bottas came right out of the gate. First six races, actually, was on the podium with wins in Australia and Azerbaijan, second places in Bahrain, China, and Spain, and then third in Monaco. So he came out those first six races and let everybody know that he was here to compete. And for Valtteri, for finishing fifth last year, he's guaranteed second. Charles Leclerc right now, who is in third, cannot catch Bottas with these last two races. Valtteri is 314 points. Charles has 249. So even if Charles were to win with the fastest lap in Brazil and Abu Dhabi, that's only 52 points. That's only going to get him to 301, which is going to put him still 13 points back of Valtteri Bottas, even if Valtteri weren't to score in the last two races. So it's going to be a 1-2 finish for Mercedes in the Drivers' Championship standings with Lewis first and Valtteri second. And that is a perfect, not a perfect season, but a near-perfect season for Valtteri Bottas in terms of bouncing back. His seat was up for grabs, essentially, in the first few races. He kind of shut that talk down after Monaco being on the podium for the first six and has really continued that. He fell out of the championship hunt throughout the season like everybody did when Lewis Hamilton just took over there from Spain to France, winning four straight races, and has really kind of held his own throughout the second half of the season. But Valtteri has done extremely well. He's got four wins now. He's got more podiums than he did last year. He's got more wins than he did last year. He's got more points than he did last year. And he's going to finish better than he did last year. So in Valtteri Bottas' mind, you've gotten better in essentially every aspect you needed to prove to Mercedes top brass that you can stay with this team and hang with Lewis Hamilton over the course of a season. I feel like the confidence he's building in this season and what he could build in these last two races could be huge heading into 2020, as we have, of course, the two new races on the schedule next year, adding an extra race in total, going from 21 to 22 for next season. So this could be a huge end of the season for Valtteri Bottas. He's won two out of the last three races in Japan and the United States. So if he can, I don't know if he necessarily has to win Brazil and Abu Dhabi, but if I'm Valtteri Bottas, you have to continue to beat Hamilton these next two races. Because you beat him in Japan, you beat him in the United States. If you can beat him in Brazil and Abu Dhabi and have four wins over Hamilton in the last five races of the season, that can set you up very nicely moving forward into next year. And it's confirmed that Bottas and Hamilton will both be back for Mercedes in 2020. So we know that with these last two races, it is going to be Bottas' turn to really show top brass there, Mercedes, that he can continue to hang with Hamilton and continue to provide points for this team moving forward, which is going to be huge for his future in Formula One. And now, of course, talking about Lewis Hamilton, what more can you say? The guy's just done an impeccable job all year like he usually does. He is one of, if not the best driver in the world right now, regardless of whatever league you want to look at. And, just looking at his stats again, unbelievable amount of wins. Of course, I mentioned the four straight from Spain to France. Got some help there in Canada with the penalization of Sebastian Vettel. But nonetheless, Pretty much first or seconds across the board. He had a fifth place finish in Austria, ninth place finish in the German Grand Prix, that rain-soaked German Grand Prix. But then you look at the second half of the season from Belgium onward, and he's only finished off the podium once, and that was fourth in Singapore. Other than that, it's been win, second, or third for him in the second half of the season, and really all season long. There's only been three races all year where Hamilton has not finished on the podium. Not only is he not, like, just not scoring points like some of these guys, but if it's a big deal if Hamilton doesn't make it onto the podium, it's only happened three times: Austria, Germany, and Singapore. That is dominance from a driver. It's just what he's done. And it's, you know, I've said it before that, to me, it's unfortunate to see one guy dominate as much as he has, because it's fun to see different guys step up each season. But you know what? Best guy in the best car, either beat him or just appreciate what he's doing. And I've gotten to the point now where I just appreciate the show that Hamilton puts on when he gets out there, regardless of where he starts from on the grid. He makes it fun. He makes it entertaining. And he's one of the best drivers out there. You just got to tip your cap to him once again. Sixth championship overall, third in a row for Hamilton. And it kind of makes sense. It's how he's progressed. He had won his first championship in 08. That was kind of the one-off win. Took him a while to get back to the top of the podium. Then 14 and 15, he won back-to-back championships before Rosberg beat him in 2016. Now, following that repeat, he's got a three-peat in his pocket now with 17, 18, and 19, all winning the Formula One championship. So Mercedes, of course, showing their muscle, showing what they can do with both of their drivers, finishing 1-2 in the United States Grand Prix. They will finish 1-2 in the driver's standings. But now it's time to take a look at some other teams. Let's talk about Ferrari a little bit again, because Ferrari again ran into some trouble. Leclerc did manage to finish fourth, and he picked up the fastest lap on lap 44, which is a nice little feather in the cap for Ferrari. But Vettel having suspension problems coming off that turn coming out of the S section, where just completely destroyed his back right suspension, took him out of the race. So again, car troubles for Ferrari, which has hampered them, whether it's suspension, whether it's an engine quitting, whatever it might be. Ferrari's had those kind of car troubles before, and it struck Vettel again in the United States Grand Prix. And then Charles Leclerc, again, solid drive, good drive from him. I think he had the car to make it onto the podium, but some strategy errors, some driving errors, just wasn't able to get up there. So again, young guy, he's a very fiery guy, he's a very passionate driver, as you would imagine any Ferrari driver is, and kind of got to him again. And we've seen those mistakes kind of throughout the season, sometimes more in the second half of the year, where it stood out a little bit more, these mistakes or some of these tussles over the radio with the team. And, I mean, they did get a little bit of a break from that, Ferrari. With Vettel going out early in the race, it allowed them to focus on Charles Leclerc and not have to worry about keeping both drivers happy for one race. Finally, this season, they got to just focus on one driver and not have to walk this tightrope back between both of them. But for Ferrari, overly frustrating day again for him, missing the podium, one driver not finishing in the points or finishing at all. So moving forward, last two races, I would think goal for Ferrari is just try to get someone on the podium. Try to get both drivers to the finish line, keep them both relatively happy, try to get one on the podium in Brazil and Abu Dhabi, and show that you still got some strength and fire for this season heading in to 2020. And then for Red Bull, for the second weekend in a row, a Red Bull driver is caught up in some first lap carnage. This time around, it was Alexander Albon, not Max Verstappen. But Albon, like Verstappen when it happened to Max a week ago in Mexico, Albon made this incredible charge through the field. He came out of the pits after getting the repair done in 20th, dead last place, and then charged all the way up to 5th to once again finish on the back pack of those big six, minus Sebastian Vettel. So it's a great drive from Alexander Albon, especially with that car or with the seat for 2020. Next to Max Verstappen still open. Will it be Albon? Will they give Gasly another chance? Will they surprise everyone and give Kvyat a chance possibly back at Red Bull, which I don't think he's been on Red Bull's team since 2012 or 2013 before he got sent back down to Toro Rosso and left Formula One for a while. But Max Verstappen's teammate seat is one of the four seats still up for grabs heading into 2020. And I talked about this, I think, either last week or a couple weeks ago. I thought they were going to use the end of the season standings to kind of decide who would be Max Verstappen's teammate. Because Gasly got the first half of the season in that Red Bull car, didn't do what he was expected to do, didn't have the performances that they were expecting, so obviously he got sent back down to Toro Rosso, and they elevated Alexander Albon. And I thought if Gasly can keep his lead over Albon in the point standings as a Toro Rosso driver versus Albon in the Red Bull car, then maybe that would allow Gasly the opportunity to get back on the Red Bull team next year. And maybe he feels a little more comfortable with it. Maybe he would be a little more open to it and ready to kind of adapt to that team and that pressure situation there with Red Bull. Because when you're on Red Bull's team, you're one of the big three teams and one of the big six drivers. I think that pressure really got to Gasly at the start of the season. But he's been able to keep a relatively solid second half of the season going for Toro Rosso. I mean, look at how he has done from Belgium onwards. Not incredible finishes, not that you would expect that from Toro Rosso, but he's scored in about half the races this second half of the season. So again, I don't know if that's a good enough effort, especially with the fact that Albon has now jumped him in the driver's standings overall. But it'll be interesting to see who Red Bull gives that seat to be Max Verstappen's teammate. I feel like right now it's definitely going to be Alexander Albon with the way he's finished that drive this past weekend in the United States Grand Prix, going from 20th to 5th, I think shows him that he can control this car and he's comfortable with this car. And I think it's going to be his seat really to lose heading into Brazil and Abu Dhabi. I don't think Gasly will get it back, and Kvyat, as well as he's driven this year, I think he still has a bit of a reckless reputation. I don't know if the Red Bull team will want to take that on versus letting him kind of handle that at Toro Rosso. So right now, I think, like, if I were to look at those three drivers that are in Red Bull's system right now at the Formula One level outside of Max Verstappen, that being Albon, Gasly, and Kvyat, I feel like that seat is leaning towards Albon. Moving forward to 2020. But there was some news about a driver coming back. Alfa Romeo announced that Antonio Giovinazzi will return for the 2020 season and be back along Kimi Raikkonen for 2020 Formula One next year. But like I said, still four seats open. So Red Bull looking to fill Max Verstappen's spot. Toro Rosso has yet to announce either of their drivers, but again, I would imagine whatever two don't get Max Verstappen's teammate spot will just be put back down onto Toro Rosso, and then Williams still looking to announce George Russell's teammate for next year. But that's where we're at in the world of Formula One. They will have a bye week this weekend before going to Brazil for the penultimate round of the season. It's always fun to watch them race at Interlagos. It's a super fun track. It's very, very racer and spectator friendly. So can't wait for that in a couple of weeks. But when we get back from the break, week 9 of the NFL season is just about in the books. We will take a look at the Sunday slate, and I'll give you my reaction to all of yesterday's happenings. That's coming up after the break here on the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio 94.5 FM.
Is your technology infrastructure meeting the demands of your customers, your employees, you? How does your network scale to support your growth plans? With distribution hiding behind every corner, it's time you benefited from a network and security provider that will guide your organization through rapid technology change. Blackfoot, here to enable what's next. Visit blackfoot.com/SDWAN to learn more.
So week 9 of the NFL season, just about in the books. Monday Night Football goes down tonight. We'll talk about that next segment. But before we get to that, let's talk about what went down yesterday. A busy NFL Sunday slate all started extra early with the Texans and the Jaguars going down in London at Wembley Stadium. And that was a real one-sided matchup between Houston and Jacksonville. Not too much of a surprise. If you think about the four teams in the AFC South, Houston's the only one that is still dealing with the deck they started with, right? Jacksonville had Foles. They've gone to Minshew. Not that's been a bad change necessarily. I mean, they're 4-5, so don't have a winning record, but I feel like Minshew's play has been up to the task. Their team has just made some mistakes defensively. Their offense, I mean, really, if you watch that Houston game, their offense was able to move the ball down the field, but they would stall out. And that's more of a compliment, I think, to the Houston defense than it was the Jacksonville offense sputtering. But it was still an offense that could move the ball. They just couldn't finish off drives. And that obviously is an issue, but it's not like Minshew has stepped out there in every game. They've, you know, getting blown off the field. They're getting shut out. He's won games. He's kept this team competitive. You just got to take off your cap to the way Houston played yesterday. And like I said, still dealing with the deck they started with. So Jacksonville had to go to Minshew. Indianapolis had Luck. Then he had the crazy out-of-nowhere retirement before the season started. Now Brissett with his MCL sprain. Who knows how long he's going to be out. Hoyer had to step in, even though he almost brought Indianapolis back on the road against Pittsburgh. And then Tennessee, Mariota hasn't given you what you've looked for. And Tannehill is not having a bad time at all at the start at being the starter for Tennessee. But if you look at where Houston is and where they started at week one, they're the only team that hasn't had a whole lot of change or a whole lot of obstacles. And it makes sense that they're 6-3 and running that division right now. And just a great game, a solid game from Deshaun Watson again. He had a good day through the air. He made some good plays with his feet. So all in all, just a solid game for Houston and a solid division win. Solid win for Buffalo as well. Josh Allen, 14 of 20, 160 yards and a touchdown. Had a nice game at home again for Buffalo. John Brown had a nice game receiving for him as well with 4 catches and 76 yards. And it was a game, again, Buffalo at home seems to be a totally different team this year than what they've been in the past couple years, not just overall as a team, but at home, they seem to have a certain swagger, a certain confidence about them. And Josh Allen, kind of how Kyler Murray has settled into his role as starting quarterback and seemed to getting more and more comfortable with that each week. Josh Allen has done the same thing in Buffalo. Seeing his transformation from last year to this year and how each week he seems to be getting more and more confident in his calling at the line, how he talks to players, how he carries himself on the field, his throwing's getting better. Buffalo's a legit contender, 6-2, and now with New England having their first loss, I mean, the shield of the armor of the Patriots has been dented, and Buffalo, that stampede could be coming right at them if they're not careful. They do have to play one more time this year, and that second Buffalo-New England matchup, mark that on your calendar because Josh Allen and the Bills could pull off a miraculous upset of New England later on this year. And we got some great upsets on Sunday. One of those, I guess you can call it an upset, Chiefs at home over Minnesota. Matt Moore, 25 of 35, 275 yards and a touchdown. Damian Williams had a great day rushing for Kansas City, 12 carries, 125 yards. Tyreek Hill out there catching balls, 6 catches for 140 yards and a touchdown. I mean, that Chiefs offense looked like really the same kind of team as they are when Mahomes is out there. Just, you know, Moore is not as much of a scrambler and I don't think has kind of the athletic ability of Mahomes. But that offense essentially looked the same. They were able to move the ball. They had explosive plays. They were able to dictate their drives and take nothing away from Minnesota in the way they played, but that defense really showed up. Kansas City's did and was just able to make stops there late in the game, get the ball back for Kansas City and really give them a chance. And that's going to be a tough pill to swallow for Kirk Cousins and this team going on the road against a Patrick Mahomes-less Kansas City Chiefs. You feel like that's a game you probably should win, although, again, take nothing away from Matt Moore and the way he's played for that Chiefs offense in his few starts this season. But that's definitely a missed opportunity for Minnesota. And if you're Kansas City right now with Mahomes, what the word is, he's going to try to be back for their next game next week. I could definitely see Kansas City riding an even bigger wave of momentum now, having survived these few games without Mahomes out there. And that game last night, or yesterday, in Kansas City, although a surprising visual for that game, there was a point, I want to say in the third quarter, maybe, and Minnesota's defense got a sack on Matt Moore, and then they did this camera shot of the end zone, the end zone behind Matt Moore, and there was a sea of purple jerseys. Kansas City and Arrowhead Stadium is one of those stadiums where you don't expect to see a lot of visiting fans, or even if there are a lot of visiting fans, you don't expect them to be louder than the Kansas City supporters. And there was a lot of purple in that stadium, especially a lot of purple in the lower bowl of that stadium, which was very, very surprising. But Kansas City, again, able to pull it off and a great performance at home and was able to survive. And then, not going to call this an upset, Dolphins over the Jets, because the Jets were a one-win team heading into that game anyway, and that one win coming off over Dallas when Darnold came back seems more of a fluke now than anything. But man, are we robbed? Were we robbed as NFL fans of two 0-14 teams meeting in Week 16? I think a lot of us were pretty pumped for the opportunity to see an 0-14 Miami Dolphins against an 0-14 Cincinnati Bengals in a chance for one team. Essentially, it would have been a game for the first pick of the draft. Loser of that game essentially gets pick number one. And now we got that taken away from us because the Jets can't get their heads out of their rear ends. I mean, that was an awful performance from New York. They've had some rough games this year. That was just straight up ugly. You look at the fact, Miami, I don't have the number in front of me, but I would guess that they haven't scored over 10 points in all but maybe one or two quarters so far this year. They put up 21 in the second quarter against the Jets. 21 points from Miami in a single. Then you look at the other, particularly in the second half. Miami had 21 points in the second half, only got 21 points in the second quarter, only 5 points total in the second half. That's been more of what Miami's done. To give up 21 points in one quarter to the Dolphins this year, that I would say is the worst quarter a team has played defensively across the board all season. The second quarter from the Jets defensively is the worst quarter all 32 teams have played defensively all season. How do you give up 21 points to Miami in one quarter and not fire your entire defensive staff the next day? I started hearing talks this morning of Adam Gase not surviving the season in New York. And this morning when I was kind of, making my breakfast and getting ready for the day, I kind of scoffed at that. It's like, wow, really? One of the toughest media markets, and you're not going to give a guy at least a season. You don't think he's going to make it through at least a season. Then I started thinking about it more and more. And they didn't really handle the Darnold thing great. Their team hasn't played great at all. They got one shock win over Dallas. Then he had this loss against Miami. Shoot, Adam Gase might not make it out of the season. Wouldn't be surprised now that I think about it. Honestly, I mean, when a winless team comes to you and gets their first win, they should have to grind that win out. A winless team should not beat anybody by double digits, or even come close to beating somebody by double digits. Granted, the Jets did only lose by 8 points, so technically it was a one-possession game, but it was an atrocious game played by New York. And now we get robbed of a possible 0-14 versus 0-14 matchup. That was probably the most annoying thing about my day yesterday from a standpoint of football was that the 0-14 possibility got taken away from me because the Jets couldn't do anything. But the Eagles had a nice win, transitioning now out of the blue. Eagles had a nice win over Chicago. The Bears were able to make it interesting there in the second half, but just nothing really doing from that offense. So the Eagles should have won the game, did win the game. That Pittsburgh-Indy game, I think as this season goes on, it's going to be looked at as one of the more entertaining. Back and forth, Mason Rudolph, the backup, competing at first with Brissett. Brissett goes down, then Brian Hoyer, again, somehow keeps Indianapolis in it, almost gives him a chance to win it there at the end. So it is a season of backup quarterbacks, and it's actually becoming pretty fun to watch because that's usually the story of an NFL season. If a team has a great first half of the season, their quarterback goes down, or if their quarterback goes down early, the usual reaction is, oh, that's it. It's over. Their season's done. Who's their backup? Oh, God, yeah, it's over. But this season, there's been such a different attitude around it. It's been, oh, who's up next? Oh, man, let's see what he can do. And they keep performing. Kyle Allen, Mason Rudolph, Jacoby Brissett, Brian Hoyer, Gardner Minshew. Guys that are on the bench that get a chance and perform, some better than others, but teams aren't just falling off the edge when their starting quarterback goes down, and it's refreshing to see. Speaking of Kyle Allen, he helped the Panthers bounce back after that atrocious loss to San Francisco 30-20 over Tennessee. And Christian McCaffrey, my word, young man, it was fun to watch him earlier in the season. Now it's just a downright thrill ride to watch him out there on the field, just putting guys to shame, whether he's just literally just faster than one of them or just breaks somebody's ankles and makes it around him and goes into the score. He is just an exhilarating player to watch. And initially, I think I still am pulling for Lamar Jackson to win, but I kind of want it to be between Jackson and McCaffrey. I know Russell Wilson, Aaron Rodgers, all that talk, but I kind of want the discussion to transfer more to McCaffrey and Jackson, especially after the days they had yesterday. Not that Russell Wilson had a bad day by any means, but man, it was fun to watch McCaffrey. And the Raiders, good win against Detroit at home, a game that was back and forth. I was talking to Rick here a little earlier in the hallway, our big resident Raider fan here at Lotus, and he was pumped. He was a little disappointed that Stafford had the day he did, which he had a very nice day. 26 for 41, 406 yards passing with three touchdowns. So that is a very nice day. But yeah, Raiders played a good game at home. The Buccaneers, again, almost pull off an NFC West upset on the road after going into the Coliseum earlier this year and putting up 40 or 50 points on the Rams. They go and force Seattle into overtime and lose 40 to 34. I mean, what a game from Tampa Bay. And Denver just continues to stomp all over the derailed Cleveland hype train, 24-19. Broncos won again with a backup quarterback. I'm almost thinking Cleveland's just bench Baker and put the backup in just so he can go along with everybody else in the NFL and succeed, because starters aren't doing it really right now. But then the last game of the day before we got to Sunday Night Football, Packers-Chargers. Oh! What a refreshing Sunday it was to watch the Chargers literally dominate a team for four quarters. They blanked Green Bay in the first half, didn't allow them into the end zone till the fourth quarter, and only one touchdown given up by that Chargers defense against one of the better teams in the NFL this year. And that was so freaking fun to see this team after struggling week in and week out the last couple of weeks, not able to get out of their own way, falling down the AFC West standings, for them to step up on both sides of the ball. They got a great rush on Rodgers and got multiple sacks. Their secondary, for the first time, had a solid game for four straight quarters, wasn't allowing guys to just blow by them down the field. They weren't playing 20 yards off them, letting them catch on easy button hooks or slants or in routes. There was aggression to that defense and that offense. I know I was very skeptical of the quarterback coach getting moved up to offensive coordinator for his first game against Green Bay. Gosh dang, he did a great job. Rivers looked so comfortable in the pocket. He was able to get the ball out quickly. When he had to hold it, he would adjust himself in the pocket. And that might sound small, but when you don't have a coach telling you to do that, it makes a world of difference. So it was so much fun to see the Chargers play that kind of a game against a team like Green Bay. It gives you some kind of hope for the next seven games of the season that maybe they can finish it off strong and maybe get back to the playoffs. And then, of course, Sunday Night Football. Oh, yeah. I picked the Ravens. I was pumped about picking the Ravens. I was pumped watching that game last night. Baltimore at home. Oh, my gosh. What a performance. What a performance from Lamar Jackson, Mark Ingram. That whole offense and defense went out there and took it as a personal challenge to hand New England their first loss at M&T Bank Stadium. And they absolutely did it in style. When they had a 17-0 lead into the second quarter, my jaw was just about, not as much on the table as Chargers and Green Bay, but just about that far down that they were dominating New England like that. Of course, the Patriots made a comeback, 17-13 at the half. They ended the half on 13 straight points, and it was a close game then again in the third quarter. But in the fourth quarter, Baltimore pulled away in the first quarter and then pulled away again in the fourth. That's the sign of a championship team. You had a great start, and yeah, you let the Patriots back into the game a little bit, but that is one of, if not the best team in the NFL right now that fought their way back in. And then instead of trying to grind it out and making mistakes and allowing New England to hang around, in the fourth quarter, what did Baltimore do? They put their foot on the gas pedal and gapped them. And that's what you got to do against a great team. Hats off to Baltimore. Hats off to Lamar Jackson. God, he is fun to watch. And I hope that the Ravens keep going and can maybe push for, I don't know, a Super Bowl trip. I just want to watch Lamar Jackson more. Guy's really fun to watch. Well, that was week 9. That's what I say. Super fun, super entertaining. Gotta love the NFL. And now coming up tonight on the week 9 main event, Cowboys at the Giants. We'll talk about that up next here on the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio, 94.5 FM.
Is your technology infrastructure meeting the demands of your customers, your employees, you? How does your network scale to support your growth plans? With distribution hiding behind every corner, it's time you benefited from a network and security provider that will guide your organization through rapid technology change. Blackfoot, here to enable what's next. Visit blackfoot.com/SDWAN to learn more.
NFC East matchup going down tonight to wrap up week 9 of the NFL. The Dallas Cowboys at the New York Giants. Cowboys favored by 6.5 points, which I think is fair looking at how both teams is favored right now, right? The Cowboys were on a 3-game slide until they met Philly last week and won 37-10, or a couple weeks ago, 137-10. And the Giants are still on a 4-game losing streak, having lost to Minnesota, New England, Arizona, and then Detroit. They're looking to snap that. I don't know if they'll be able to snap it against Dallas. The Giants are still missing Sterling Shepard out wide, so I think that will continue to kind of hamper the way this offense can explode, because this isn't so much a battle of quarterbacks tonight as it is a battle of running backs, right? Zeke versus Barkley. That's what we're all looking to see. How are the each team's running game going to match up with the other, and who's going to have the bigger night? And I don't think Zeke is as... how do I want to phrase this? The Giants are going to be relying on Barkley to really be the spark and the trendsetter for that offense. Whereas Dallas, you're going to rely on Zeke, but you have other options out wide, and Dak can make plays if you need him to. Whereas I don't really know how comfortable Daniel Jones is going to be in this situation with a team that's lost 3 or 4 in a row and now trying to get off that losing streak against a divisional opponent that's running the NFC East or leading the NFC East right now. So I think the 6.5 points is fair for Dallas. I can see it maybe more around 10 to 13 range, but I do think Dallas is going to take this one at home. I think they just continue to make their way through an NFC East division that isn't really seeing anybody pull away or anybody stand out. Dallas is 4-3 right now, and they're leading the division, so it's not a division that has anybody running away with a crown right now. So we'll see how New York can get back, if New York can get back in it. But I think it's going to be the Cowboys' night in the Big Apple. I guess technically in New Jersey, but I'm picking the Cowboys. That's the show. Thank you so much for tuning in. Tune in tomorrow. We'll have Terry on to get his Monday Night Football reaction, NBA Week 2 recap, and more. We'll talk to you then. Peace.